basketball.
Blog Talk Radio.
You know, you can't get your started.
Fellow Americans, it is with the utmost pride and sincerity that I present this recording as a living testament and recollection of history in the making during our generation.
Allow me to reintroduce myself.
My name is Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
Sir Robert Fortune.
Okay, we get it. Start the show.
We are about. Yeah. Yes, sir. Let's go.
Never get old.
I need you to help me light my spirits.
I know. It is what it is. Wednesday, man. The month of August is upon us. A lot of things happening.
Yes, sir. Leo season.
Again. Yeah, it's here, man. This is it. I don't know. Kids going back to school. They may not be happy about that, but we're happy because it's football season. And I'm here with two guys.
Yeah.
JQ, Rob. I need this opportunity like your heart. Seriously, man. Seriously. Just it's all good. But here we,
JQ,
Rob. You okay?
You okay? Off of Sean McKee's trying to be hard.
Oh man. We are officially talking sports with 12 men. I'm trying to liven up JQ's mood, man. A lot of things happening right now. We're going to talk about that for sure. But again, you're talking sports with the 12th man. Let's check in with the fellas. As always, you know me, I'm Dre. But let's check in, Mr. JQ. In spite of what's happening this evening, how are you feeling this evening, man?
Man, it's just been crazy. We had a really good trip with the girls. Shout out to Rob for the shrimp and grits. It was excellent. Came back. Mm-hmm. We have been talking about getting a dog. We got a dog. You know, my birthday is in 10 days. The girls go back to school on the 6th. And then Urban Meyer happened today, and it was like, yay! And brought everything to a screeching halt.
Wow, JQ, you're a Leo? You're born on, what is it, August the 11th? Is that when you were born?
Yep, August 11th.
Man, our anniversary is August the 12th. Marcy's birthday is August the 18th. My sister's, my brother's mom's birthday is on the 9th. Man, there's a lot of things happening, man. That's crazy, man.
Yeah,
well,
yes, sir.
Get that going, man. That's fantastic.
Yes, sir.
Not to be further ado, and we'll help you with that too, man. I know everything's been happening as far as that, so we'll definitely dive into the aftermath, if you will. It's still kind of early right now too, so it doesn't look good. Mr. Rob Ford, how you feeling this evening, bro?
Man, doing great. You know, got that pre-nap show, you know, so I'm ready to go. Let's get this party started.
Rob's working up.
You know, he didn't eat since he was asleep.
Yeah.
It is fun times, for sure. All right, gentlemen, let's get this party started here. Let's throw out the numbers, as we always do. If you want to reach out, check in. Again, if you come with some nonsense, you are getting cut off. This is a serious
talk
show, so 100%. So if you call in,
no more whack on for you.
Morning, we got to talk some sports. And, you know, we have some fun here, but the platform is definitely sports talk we talk about. So again, 424-243-9519. I had to make sure that I say that, gentlemen, because I'm getting a lot of feedback, which has been really fantastic. But again, just want to make sure that everyone knows that whenever you call in, this is calling in talking sports. That is what we do. Follow us on Twitter at the number 12 THMAN Sports. And then last but not least, you guys can follow us on Facebook. And we'll continue to move forward with that.
Yeah, we don't want to hear that ish, y'all.
No, we do not. All right. So I know we're going to talk a lot about what's been happening. I know we didn't really get a chance to have any talks as far as the baseball trade deadline, because I guess there's been some interesting moves. But, you know, we can talk about the Reds and Tigers. Again, shout out to JQ. And just a quick recap as far as that. So I don't know if you want to take that, Rob, or you want to take that, JQ. Kind of your call on that perspective, if you will.
I know he'll probably
give him the first shot.
Yeah. I mean, there ain't a whole lot to say. They went to Detroit and got beat two games. I mean, they couldn't score any runs. And they lost to Boyd yesterday. And even though Fears got injured early today, couldn't get over the hump after beating Detroit 2-3 in Cincinnati earlier in the year. The offense just hasn't been what it was pre-All-Star break. And some of that is, you know, we're talking
about
the trade of Adam Duvall to the Braves for a couple of prospects, but also Luke and Winker. Who was playing really well for them to a season-ending shoulder injury, and then Shevler being on the DL. It just has affected that outfield, and it's affected the power in the middle of that lineup. you know, they were trying to get back to respectability. You know, losing two to Detroit does not help that because Detroit is in that same boat. Do you feel like those are games you got to at least split, if not win both of them? The pitching was good yesterday. Pitching was bad today. It's kind of been the story of the season. When we pitch, we don't hit. And then when we don't pitch, we hit, but not enough to overcome the bad pitching. And that's pretty much just in a nutshell of, you know, the two games in Detroit. Because guess what?
Hold on, Rob, sorry, before you answer. So, but JQ, though, seriously, kind of watching the season, and, mm-hmm. and I guess management has pretty much said, hey, I guess, you know, right now it doesn't look like everything is going. So they were best. They were definitely, you know, sellers at the trade deadline, if you will. So they're probably thinking the season is pretty much over at this juncture too. So, I mean, I guess it's probably why they made all those moves because, yeah, Duvall getting a lot of prospects. They're turning the page, which I agree with you. It's pretty surprising because they're playing so well before the All-Star break. So it's just kind of baffling how just in, you know, a couple of weeks, you know, just how that kind of changed. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but the thing about it, too, is that it's a mixed message, right? So you trade Duvall, who is going to be eligible for arbitration after this year, and you say you don't want to pay him because you got the other young guys that I talked about in the outfield. But then you hold on to Matt Harvey, and you hold on to Iglesias, two pieces that a lot of people have been talking about, and the Braves are coming really strong for Matt Harvey as well. I think they wanted to really make that a two-man trade to get Duvall and Harvey, but the Reds balked that.
They were trying.
Yeah. Was too high. So to me, it's a mixed signal. You trade one of the three guys that people have been talking about being out there in terms of team, other teams wanting, but you keep the other two, and you got Iglesias on a good contract. But the Matt Harvey one, you know, you still have baseball is a little weird. You can still do that, you know, that drop kind of trade where you can put somebody on waivers and pull them back and work out a trade with the team that claims them. So they still have to August 31st, I believe. Yeah, it's just crazy. It's another trade deadline. So they still have the August 31st to do it. But I just wonder if you felt that way about Duvall, why hold on to Harvey? I would love for them to try to re-sign Harvey too and send him late in, you know, 1 or 2 year deal and see if you can convince him to stay in Cincinnati. But if he hasn't decided to do that yet, and you know his agent is Scott Boras, I just wonder what's going on. Are they asking for the moon? And people are like, nah, player, you're tripping. And they're kind of waiting them out. Or, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out over this month of August.
Rob Ford.
Well, yeah, I mean, JQ said it there. Actually, the Reds have a slightly better record than the Detroit Tigers. But the Reds are in last place in their division, and the Tigers are in third place. Obviously, we can talk about the strengths of the division. But, yeah, the Tigers got a 7-4 win, mainly led by Jose Iglesias, which was three runs he drove in today and helped the Tigers get the victory today. Close out the series.
Yeah, man. And I think we go to Washington next. We get who? We get Max Scherzer tomorrow. So, great. Good times.
Hey, man, just let it roll, bro. Hey, let the season just come, bro. All right, let's keep this going here.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley, never been a stranger to saying things, and he had a lot of comments regarding, you know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, you know, Draymond Green. A lot of things happening, too, so, you know. And just kind of starting this off, too, I know this is really big. I'll let Rob kind of kick this off. And a lot of stuff, it was pretty sensible. I mean, obviously the comment about LeBron, you know, moving to, you know, signing with the Lakers because he's a Hollywood mogul. I don't think that's a problem that he's trying to go to L.A. Everyone knew that was happening, even though, yeah, we all wish he would stay. But just that was kind of the next move. There's nothing else there for him. So in spite of what you talk about, how he still thinks there's a 5 or 6 team or 5 or 6 rate, whatever. I think he made comments as far as their rank, but – I mean, everything else, it's interesting as far as how he's just kind of saying what's on his mind. And I don't think they're as controversial as what Shannon Sharpe said. But, Rob, tell us your thoughts about that. We'll kick it over to JQ as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, the Charles Barkley comments, I think he's partially right. And I think, you know, the few things he said you probably would disagree with. You know, he mentioned that LeBron James is on the downside of his career. I wouldn't necessarily quite say that just yet. Because statistically, probably offensively, LeBron James had one of his best years statistically going back to this past season. So I don't think you can quite say he's on a downside of his career. I probably would agree that, you know, he still probably has another 2 to 3 years left where he can be at least a top 5 player in the league still. But I do think if you're the Lakers, you have to be a little bit worried about how much time you have to put together a championship team while LeBron is in his prime, because I believe he's 33 going on 34 or something around that time frame. So I do believe if you're the Lakers, the time is of the essence due to his age. And like I say, he takes great care of his body. But we really don't know how long he's going to be able to play at this kind of level. And, you know, he's already starting to take plays off on defense. And even though statistically he had his best year offensively of any year he's had since he's been in the NBA. So it's going to be real interesting. And that was the one reason why I thought maybe they should have tried to expedite getting Kawhi Leonard. Because, like I said, we don't know how long he's going to be able to play at this level. He's got a four-year deal, but how long? I mean, time has got to be of the essence if you want to win another championship with LeBron James. Now, with him being a Hollywood mogul, this move going to Los Angeles definitely had a lot of business side to it for LeBron James. Yeah, even after LeBron James retired, you're going to hear about him. You're going to hear about LeBron James for the next 20, 30 years, even after he retires from basketball, just from a business standpoint, just from an entertainment standpoint. He's going to have his resources tied into a lot of things. And it's not a coincidence that he's connecting with Magic Johnson, who's had a lot of success in both the business world, both the entertainment world as well. After basketball, and you can expect LeBron James to probably be involved with some ownership in sports as well. He's going to have that kind of capital and resources. I mean, right now he's basically been averaging $100 million a year since he's been in the NBA, and he's been in the NBA like 15 years. So, I mean, I'm sure if he's taking care of his finances, which I believe he is, you know, he's going to be around for a long time. So this him going to L.A. had a lot more to do than basketball, in my opinion. So in that regard, you have to agree with Charles Barkley as well.
A lot to unpack there. I don't really quibble with anything that Charles Barkley said, and I don't have a problem with it. I think, like you talked about it, I think most of it is very much non-basketball related for everything that you just laid out. And also don't forget that he wants his son to go to that school in L.A., to continue his career in terms of trying to ascend to have a career, in the NBA. And LeBron is very much
You got to look at the AAU basketball in L.A. too. It's at a high level.
Yep, and he knows that. He's tapped into it. Like you talk about, I mean, the school he opened up in Akron, just phenomenal, you know, how many guys are doing that. So you got to give him a lot of credit. I'm with you. You know, philanthropy-wise, business-wise, he's going to be around a long time. And why not connect with Magic for it to do that? So I don't necessarily have a problem with it. But just when he said the downside of his career, I feel like he's right. I mean, like you said, in terms of a total basketball player that we've seen LeBron be, he's not the same defensively. So that brings him down the backside of him. He's been playing 15 years. It's hard to not be on the downside of your career after 15 years. Yes, he had a fantastic offensive season, but defensively he regressed. And I think that pulls him back some from where the peak LeBron that we know where he does it on both ends of the floor. Some of that's just age and mileage. And I'm not going to fault him for that. But if you look at it by sheer numbers and look at the longevity of his career in year 15, I mean, it's not an insult to me to say somebody's on the downside of career. They've been doing it at a high level for 15 years. I mean, he's not like down at the basement on the downside, but, you know, he's turned that corner, that apex, and, you know, he's coming down the hill. Now, he's not all halfway down the hill. I won't say that. You know, he's just a little bit down the hill, but he's still going downhill, if in my opinion. And again, it still leaves him as arguably the best player in the world, which is just a testament to what peak LeBron was. But just to cap this off, there's a piece of this that is basketball related that goes sneakily undeterred. He wanted, I believe, he would really give a consideration if Cleveland had the young core that L.A. has, but since they don't, he was like, okay, I can't stay here. So if all things been equal, I'm going to go to where I can be closest to being the businessman I want to be and be in L.A. But the other side of it is he's already been killed once for being a quote-unquote mercenary, being a super team in Miami. You know, the narrative would have been if he had went to a Philadelphia or a Houston, oh, here he go again. And I think that might have hurt his legacy even if he reaches that 5-6 ring mark because they say, oh, look what he did. Couldn't get it done in Cleveland again, so now he's hop train to the next best thing smoking. He did it to Miami, now he did it to, say, Philly. I think he understood that. He was like, okay, what can I do then, all things being considered? I can do this for my family. I can do this for me business-wise. But if I go to L.A. to that franchise and help them get turned around with that young core and I mess around and win one, what would people say about, oh, well, you know, he did it his way. He was still able to win a title with an L.A. team nobody thought he could do it with. I think that enhances part of his legacy, if you will. And, I'm, you know, I would have loved for him to get Kawhi. But if you got to gut, you know, clean the cupboard out to get him, then what is he going to do? And I think he talked to Magic, like, don't do that. If Kawhi wants to come here, we both basically just take a year. You say, Kawhi, you get healthy. Dog, see you in 2019. I'm going to get these young guys together, and me and you for 2 or 3 years, just, you know, catch lightning in the bottle with these young guys and see what we can do. I think that's really where he is with his right now. But being able to do that in L.A., where people don't view that as a ring-chasing kind of scenario, if he's able to get a ring in that scenario, it definitely helps his on-basketball legacy.
All right. We let you have your moment, JQ. That was good, bro. Yeah, and like you said too, man, definitely going into this is definitely a kind of check, you know, definitely see what's happening with the squad. I know they signed, you know, a lot of veterans to the one-year rentals here, and I guess they're going to see how that plays out. Mm-hmm. And then if everything goes well, you know, they'll kind of pick and choose. If the chemistry was there, they're not going to be financially strapped. But they definitely have a lot of flexibility if they decide to, like you said, again, reach out to Kawhi the next year, little things like that too. The second comment I did talk about
that I promise school, though, man, that is incredible. Free tuition,
that's
free uniform,
yeah,
free bicycle and helmets, free transportation within 2 miles,
free bikes,
free breakfast,
yeah,
lunch,
great,
and snacks, food pantry for families, GED job placement services for parents, guaranteed tuition to the University of Akron for every student who graduates. That is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you have to add that to his legacy,
that, yeah.
In addition to what he's been able to accomplish on a basketball court. I don't think we've ever seen an athlete that's been able to pull something like this off. Maybe David Robinson close, with the school he's done down in San Antonio, but I think his school is more private. This is actually a public school, which is incredible what he's been able to accomplish there. Unbelievable.
Fantastic. Yeah. That's a good point. I was actually going to bring that up too, man, because, again, you talk about him doing this thing, man, and even this is why I don't have a problem with him doing this stuff in L.A. I mean, obviously basketball is what he does, but if he's able to, you know, produce shows and kind of feed that machine, you kind of see, you know, obviously he's getting his, but the fact he's able to kind of pour that back into the neighborhood, I mean, I think it's fantastic. And you hope that other athletes will kind of follow suit and start. I'm not saying every athlete is selfish, but just, you know, hey, this is kind of how you do it, man. You kind of definitely impact your community. Don't just say it and just, you know, give some money, but actually do something that's going to impact the community, man. So, again, much props to LeBron for doing that. And we've never been – I mean, I've never been a LeBron hater. I've always been a fan of LeBron from that perspective too. So, good job, LeBron, man. We appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir.
Last thing we'll talk about just really quickly was regarding Charles Barkley and Udon. Talk a little bit about – you know, definitely we're going to talk about this with Shannon Sharp making the same comment about Kevin Durant. And I know he was talking about Kevin Durant was trying to be the bad boy, trying to be this bad guy, if you will. And, you know, it is what it is. You've heard me say this as far as, you know, you've had the situations where in a lot of the movies, the superhero, he's the hero, then he becomes the villain and vice versa. And I think, you know, from that perspective, too, I mean, Kevin, he's trying to find his place. He's a nice guy, yeah. He's kind of have a little edge. Maybe it doesn't work. Maybe it doesn't, you know. So, again, maybe he's worried about his legacy and he's still a little upset about the feedback that he's gotten. But, you know, at the end of the day, he'll kind of find his place. And, you know, we've got these fake bad guys, and we'll talk about that, fake tough guys, if you will. But the league has changed a lot, man. So, again, I just wanted to get your thoughts about that, Rob, and kind of what you think about what Charles did in that instance.
Well, it's another case of Charles Barkley talking, and, you know, Charles Barkley used to have a saying, say, I may be wrong, but I doubt it. I don't know if y'all remember Charles Barkley say that back in the day. This is another case of Charles Barkley being right. I think the comment you said about Kevin Durant was perfect. And basically, his thought process was Kevin Durant is a really nice guy, you know, trying to be a tough guy. And, I mean, you can't really do that. And Kevin Durant, I think, you know, he needs to stop retaliating at these other people's comments, and that's what Charles Barkley was referring to here. I mean, I think 90% of the people in the sports world did not like when Kevin Durant went to the Golden State Warriors, especially because it's a team that they lost to and had on the ropes in the Western Conference Final, and then you went to join them. As opposed to staying to beat him. And now You know, I think, you know, he made the comment to was it C.J. McCollum with the Blazers, I believe it was.
Yeah,
it was C.J., you know, he told C.J. McCollum something about you won't win a championship or something like that, and McCollum retaliated with, you know, the only reason he won one because he joined a team that he couldn't beat or something. And Kevin Durant retaliated. I'm sorry?
Said he called the move soft.
Yeah, called Kevin Durant soft. That's what it was. Thank you. Yeah, he called Kevin Durant soft for that move. And Kevin Durant, you know, people, every time someone makes a comment, he's got some kind of retaliation. And I think Charles Barkley is just basically saying that, hey, Kevin Durant, you know, he said, I didn't agree with you going to Golden State either, but you just need to stop retaliating all these other people's comments and just go out there and play basketball. And I think he's, you know, I think he's still fed up with all the comments. But, hey, you know, this is a decision that you've made. Just go out and do what you're supposed to do. Ain't no sense of commenting about all these different things and things of that nature. And I think that's what Charles Barkley is on this note. I mean, 90% of sports writers and sports broadcasters around the world didn't agree with Kevin Durant's move. But, I mean, come on, it's been 3-4 years now. You got to move past this and stop retaliating to it.
Yeah, the thing about it is, you know, there are nice people out in the world that have an edge underneath that nice veneer that you see. And if you press the certain buttons, it starts to come out. So I think in a sense, it's taking both people. Right. I think Kevin Durant was and probably still is a pretty nice guy. But those things really stung him. And, you know, he's using it as fuel. Like, you know, I remember a story reading about Michael Jordan where people were so in awe of him, different, they stopped talking to him and this, that, and the other. And he just made up a story about the dude that was playing him on the other team, you know, in his mind, that this dude had talked junk to him and had disrespected him. And it never happened. And he just went out there and torched that dude based off the story that he had made up in his mind. And sometimes as an athlete, you know, that's crazy. But you look for everything to give you an edge. And I think this is, you know, that Kevin Durant that was there in Oklahoma City, maybe without this stuff, you know, if he had this stuff in Oklahoma City, I mean to say, maybe he gets over the hump against Golden State. But, you know, this vitriol that he got once he left, and again, that's on him. He made the decision. He had to know it was coming. But it's kind of pushed him to another level. You know, that edge he plays on the basketball court, I personally love it. He has played on another level defensively that he did not play in Oklahoma City with. He has improved leaps and bounds with his defensive effort. And if these people talking bad about him helped him get to that point, then, you know, good for him. I hope it doesn't eat him up on the inside where he can't find that balance of, you know, who I am most of the time, except for when these things happen and provides me this fuel and motivation when I'm on the basketball court. But a big piece of me is like, hey, man, he made his decision. People made their decision how they wanted to react to it, you know, including me. I didn't agree with it. But he's doing nothing but going out there and showing and proving. He's been the MVP, finals MVP with that team you said didn't need him. I mean, and I think a part of that is the fuel of people doubting him and calling him, you know, soft and this, that, and the other. So, you know, if he can keep it in context in terms of, you know, his well-being and how he lives his life, you know, off the basketball court as well as on, then I'm all for it. You know, whatever you need to do within reason to get yourself going, go for it.
Yeah. And I think what people got to realize, too, how someone chooses their career path is not going to be the same how you would choose your career path. Everyone would choose their career path differently. And, I mean, I wasn't a fan of it, but this is not like this is the first time this has ever happened in the NBA. We've had several superstar players to move around. I know Jordan was blessed to be able to stay with one team his entire career. I think Kobe Bryant, of course, had the draft day trade, and he was with the Lakers his entire career. But hey, at one point, Kobe actually traded from the Lakers himself. So everybody's career path is different. I mean, Charles Barkley bounced around the league. Hey, Wilt Chamberlain bounced around the league in the NBA a few times. Shaquille O'Neal bounced around the league. This has happened before in NBA history. Players have moved around, and a lot of players that have been successful. So everyone chooses their career path differently.
Mm-hmm. And just to like finally wrap this up with a bow, and you know, we talked about him leaving OKC, and again, we still don't understand or know the full relation between him and Russell Westbrook, because again, that could have been a decision too, like he didn't want to play with him or whatever. You know, I'm not saying that was the right move for him to go to Golden State, but definitely some guys didn't have the best relationship, or maybe he saw, hey, this is not going anywhere or whatever too. So just keep that in mind too as well whenever you're looking at this scenario too. So that's probably why.
Russell was able to keep Paul George.
Yeah, that's not a knock on what's happening, but again, I mean, hell, $120 million, whatever you made, you probably stay too, bro. You know, you get the max contract.
Paul George is an asshole. I mean, you got to remember, he broke up that Indiana team by, I think, dating or sleeping with Roy Hibbert's girlfriend or whatever at the time. So Paul George got a little bit of that Russell Westbrook in him, too. And sometimes they don't work out, they can't be together. But sometimes he's like, you know what, you're an asshole, I'm an asshole too. Let's be assholes together and just act a fool. And I think that might be where that, you know what I'm saying, but that might be where they are, honestly. Like, you know, it that could work out. Paul George has that kind of personality on the low. It just kind of has been held under the radar because he played in Indiana and now he's in Oklahoma City, where that spotlight isn't as bright. So I agree that what you're saying about Russ, but I think that's the difference between that Kevin Durant then not being able to coexist with Russ and move it on, and Paul George asking to re-up. I think Paul George and Russ are more cut from the same cloth.
Yeah, 100%. All right, gentlemen. Good call. Let's keep this moving here. We are moving right on. We got about 18 minutes left in the show here. Let's talk about Shannon Sharp, his comments. Talking about tough guys and Draymond, stop pretending you're hard, if you will. And Go ahead,
two pieces.
Man, when he said, yes, sir, when he said, hey, Draymond, you got a closet in your apartment? He said, take this two-piece suit. Man, I laughed out loud at work when I had my headphones listening to that. I said, Come on, Shannon Sharp. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Draymond. Man, I couldn't help it. That was hilarious.
I love it. It's definitely interesting, too, because – you know, we talk about this, like, gentlemen, the league has changed, right, from back in the day. I mean, before, you had some tough guys, man. One of the toughest guys I'm always going to throw out there is, like, Charles Oakley. I mean, that dude right
there. Charles Oakley.
I mean, I don't know if he probably averaged, 2 points a game, whatever. Probably more. I'm just being facetious. But, I mean, it was like, yeah, come try to do a
lift.
He
would knock down at a wide-open 18-footer.
Yeah, yeah, he would. I'm not saying he was a bad player. I'm just saying, too, I'm thinking of just a tough guy. These are some guys that you know, I ain't messing with Oakley.
Rick Mahorn.
See, same thing. We're on the same page. Xavier McDaniel. I'm just thinking the guy just had the reputation of, man, this is a tough guy.
Man, you look like a dude you don't want to see in the alley.
I mean, you know, Gary Payton, you know, he was a tough guy. He would just talk your head off. But, you know, what I'm saying is, like, you know, there's definitely the league has switched from having, you know, there's no more players like that in the league anymore. So I don't know what's happening, that they're trying to, like, you know, just kind of – just create drama, if you will, or what, regarding this. But it's just different, I guess, from what I'm trying to throw out there too. So again, you know, Shannon, he's cracking me up, alligator mouth with a hummingbird butt, man. It's hilarious. I think eventually somebody's gonna put you to the test. I don't know if it's an act or what it is, Draymond, but yeah, I mean, if you whatever you need to do to have that edge to keep playing, I guess it's going to work for him, too. So what are your thoughts about that, Rob?
Well, you know, it's interesting. They say LeBron James and Kevin Durant broke the fight up, if this is true.
Yes.
And Bossa broke the story. You know, for those of our listeners who don't know what Bossa is, it's a black gospel site, a gossip site, black gossip site. And it's called Bossa. So they're the ones who initially broke this story about after the ESPYs. So, I mean, obviously – you know, there's some people saying this didn't happen. Some say it did happen. But according to Bossa, Kevin Durant and LeBron James broke up the fight. But if you go back and look at the end of the debacle of the NBA Finals that we had this past June here, when the two teams kind of lined up and shook hands at the end of the game, they were barking with each other. They didn't even shake hands. I don't know if you can go back and look at that video, but they did not shake hands. I think they were the only two that did not shake each other's hands out of everybody in that walk lineup thing they do when they were shaking each other's hands. But they were barking against each other in that line too. So I mean, there's definitely some turmoil, some animosity there between those two individuals. And you know, Tristan Thompson shoved the ball in his face in one of those games. I can't remember which game it was. In the NBA Finals, too. So there's definitely something there between those two players. And I can only imagine that, you know, according to Shannon Sharp, wah wah, and gave him that two piece.
Man, that
I would have loved
that
to see it. You know, I just, Draymond Green is a punk ass in my opinion.
Well, you know what happened? I think Clay was there too, which is crazy that he's hanging out with them after they beat him again. But it was reported that it was one of LeBron's parties where you couldn't have any cell phones. He was pulling that Derek Jeter move where, you know, we're going to party and cut a fool and then we know video footage of it. So, you know, once again, LeBron with his head on right, like, now, player, you got to leave that phone in the car, check it at coach, and, you know, with your coat. But, outside of Golden State fans, everybody wants to see that. Really, because they just want somebody to just hit Draymond upside his head. He's on your team, you love him. He's not on your team, you hate him. He's one of those guys, and you got to have one of those guys on your team, and that's who he is for Golden State. It's just that you don't, you know, I look at Tristan and just don't see him as being the dude to do it out of all the NBA players. But like you said, if you go back, I think it was game two maybe, when they had that, Tristan was telling him, you know what, I'll see you in the locker room. I'll see you in the tunnel. When he shoved the ball in his face and he got ejected, that's exactly what he told him, you know, saying, like, come meet me in the tunnel now. You know, so Tristan was on that since, you know, game two, I believe that was when that happened. And then you talk about the handshake line. And then, you know, Draymond talking about we ain't cut from the same cloth. So Tristan was, you know, if he did, hats off to Tristan. You know, Tristan said, I need me some positive PR. What can I do to get some positive PR after all this Chloe foolishness? Oh, you know what I can do? I can fight Draymond Green. And it works. You know, if you looked at Twitter, I mean, there was people that was all about Tristan. Like, yeah, finally somebody, man, what took so long? Like, people were all about it. That's why I love it. I'm just shocked that it was Tristan was the one that did it. Out of all the players you look at in the landscape of the NBA, like Tristan Thompson, you don't think about Toronto, even as much as Drake says it. You don't think about Toronto being the guy that's going to produce the dude that's going to go out there and serve up the dude from Saginaw. You know what I mean? So it's just a weird dynamic with that. But that's off to Tristan Thompson if he did that.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. Draymond Green from Sag Nasty.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we got about 12 minutes here. I think we talked briefly about, you know, if he really punched him and all that fun stuff. But the final decision, decision 3.0 for LeBron's legacy, I don't think it's going to tarnish it, obviously. Just in a quick nutshell, we talked about what he did for the Promise School. If you briefly want to touch on that, JQ, the floor is yours, bro.
He took a big gamble, and I talked about the upside of what he could do if he's able to reach the promised land with the Lakers. He won't be a Laker great. We had that conversation before with just one. But to make that decision and win one, I think would still help him out. But he's got a downside of, you know, not choosing to go and, you know, talk about Kevin Durant, caring about other people's perception of him and say, I'm not going to choose Houston or Philadelphia because I'd be viewed as a mercenary. And I really believe that was a part of his decision making. If you go to L.A., you fall on your face, and you don't push for this Kawhi trade for the reasons I stated, and then he doesn't come, and you don't end up getting anybody, and those Lakers young guys, nobody steps forward, and you're sitting down like, shit, I'm sitting here with Cleveland 2.0. That could definitely, to me, could tarnish his legacy. Even all the great stuff he does off the court, no matter what bomb movie he produces or puts his money behind, he goes to L.A., on-court product, and chooses that team over where he could have gone, and that team doesn't gel like he thinks it's going to, and they don't reach the promised land or get at least to the pinnacle of where you like, you know, what he did, all he could do. But goddamn, Golden State is just tripping. You just, nobody's beating them. I don't care who you get. If that happens, you know, and he doesn't get to that point, I think that could tarnish his legacy because he had other options. And it depends on how Houston and Philadelphia, of course, play out. Like, oh my goodness, you can just look at those two teams and say, man, if they had LeBron for these 2 or 3 years, they definitely win a title or two. If that's the case and LA falls on their face, it could tarnish it. So he's got definitely a big, you know, reward, and he's got a high ceiling. He's got a low floor. You know, it's definitely a boom or bust kind of scenario for him right now. So he gambled on himself. We'll see.
Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, we talked about this before, that it's definitely a gamble on his part because every superstar player that have played for the Lakers have won championships. And so this was definitely a huge gamble on LeBron James' part by going to the Lakers. That being said, I think JQ said it well, that if he don't win at least two championships, he won't be considered a Laker great, but he'll be still considered an NBA great. If he wins one title in Los Angeles somehow, I think that adds to his NBA greatness, but it won't necessarily make him an all-time Laker great, but his overall resume will look a lot better. But it's a big gamble on his part for Laker Nation. If he doesn't win a championship or two in Los Angeles, I mean, that's a big gamble for him as far as, you know, being a big a legend in Los Angeles, which is going to be a lot. And to me, you know, looking at it, it's still hard for me to envision him winning the title in Los Angeles as the way it's currently constructed when you look at the way Golden State is constructed at the moment. I mean, what can the Lakers do to catch Golden State here in these next 2 to 3 years?
Fight them every game. That's what they went and got that team for. Beat them up. I mean, that's pretty much what they say.
We're going to play that Detroit Pistons old school basketball. Mahorn and Lane.
Beat them up.
Dennis Rodman and John Sally.
Yes, sir. Oh, wow. Beat them up. I mean, look at the way they're constructing their team. They're not going, and as you said, you can't out Golden State. You're not going to outshoot them the way they construct it. So what do? You slow them down. You know, you may not necessarily make them work on the offensive, on the defensive end guarding you, but you beat them up every time they go around the screen and do this and that. You put an elbow into them, a hip, some kind of. You make them feel your presence when every trip down the court. And they have that team
feel
right now.
Presence.
I'm not saying they're going to win. But feel your presence, and I feel like that's what they say they're going to do. Sometimes you got to, you know, go to the bottom.
Give them
line,
some,
you know,
remember me
shots,
as Greg Williams used to say.
That's what it is. To take down that head, sometimes you got to go to that body. And I feel like they're going to throw a lot of body blows. You know, and again, that's not to say they're going to meet at some point. If they meet at some point in the playoffs, to me, it's at best a 1-8 matchup this year, if we're being honest. But just in those 3 or 4 games they play each other, you know, throughout the regular season, I personally just think that's what they're going to have to do, just beat them up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like when the Saints played the Colts in the Super Bowl, Greg Williams said, we got to give Peyton Manning some remember me shots.
There you go.
Yeah, that's what
you
got to do.
That dude right there, you should be quoting Greg Williams, bro. That's the wrong guy to quote, man, just saying.
Oh, man, it's funny, though.
Mm-hmm. It is funny. 8 minutes.
And it's
here.
Correct.
Just to say – I mean, I agree with both you guys. Good points, Rob. Good points, JQ. Just to say about LeBron, I think it's you got to respect him even more because he made the decision to go to the Lakers, even though they didn't have a stacked team. An easy decision would be to go to the 76ers or whatever, or the Rockets. So for him,
yeah.
I give LeBron credit for actually.
And
then for
his
case, I'm gonna go here. Yeah, go ahead.
To me, the easy decision would have been Philly because you know
easily,
he was still had another cakewalk to get to the finals. And to me, even though he goes to Houston, the Western Conference is loaded, and so it's not a cakewalk to get to the finals in the Western Conference. And if he went to Philly, I mean, there's no telling how many straight NBA Finals he could have made it to if he would have went to Philadelphia. So I mean, he could have probably added. What did he see? He went to 6 straight NBA Finals, if I'm not mistaken. He could have possibly added a few more to that at least going to Philadelphia.
So basically, that's what I was saying. I was definitely just saying that I give him credit because he could have taken the easy road and gone there. But that's why, you know, again, there's other things behind his decision, obviously, to go to Lakers because of what he's trying to do and accomplish, too. So, I mean, again.
Yeah, like, going to the Lakers, he's going to have to work really extremely hard just to get that team to the playoffs. He could have taken some nights off in Philadelphia and then turn it up come playoff time. But he's not going to have many opportunities to take nights off with just the current Laker team. He's going to have to work extremely hard to get this team to the playoffs in the Western Conference.
Right. Have a fun. Yeah. All right, gentlemen. 6 minutes. Hopefully we can get to our football within the show before we go to OT. So, Dougie Fresh, you're on. Yeah. All right. The last thing we're talking about basketball. You know, don't get me started, JQ. I got all the songs in my head. Let's talk briefly about
human.
Beatbox machine. Yeah. All right. Here we go.
He is.
I'm talking junk about talking sports, and I'm over here throwing music references. Let's talk about Kyrie Irving. And I appreciate that, JQ. And really quickly, I kind of just sniffed about this, and whenever I was looking this up, this is kind of interesting because again, the fact that there's like smoke, there's fire about him going to the Knicks, and I got like a lot of Knicks fans are going nuts about this. You know, number one, Spike Lee too. But is there actually any truth some way, somehow, to this? Because at the end of his contract with the Celtics, he's not really saying anything right now. So What does that mean, JQ? Does that just, you know, are you trying to, like, toy with the Knicks fans' feelings while you're playing with my emotions, Smokey? What's going on with this, man?
I think it's a real possibility. And people have been saying it's either the Knicks or the Nets. You know, I tell those people, you know what I do? Stop it. He's not going to the Nets. He's from New Jersey, and I think that's why he wants to stop it. And for him, we talked about it.
Brooklyn now, they're not in Jersey no more.
Brooklyn, he's not going to the Nets. Because you got to – I understand that. I'm just saying they're both in New York, so they're close to that New Jersey, you know, hometown where he's from. But the Nets organization and then the Knicks organization in terms of the history of the league, like, you know, come on now. There's not even no comparison. He wants to be that guy, and that's why he wanted to get out of LeBron's shadow. And I think he's looking at Boston like, oh, they got a nice young studs, start with Jason Tatum, that, you know, if we win, especially given what they did last year, it won't be all about me. I think Kyrie is one of those guys that needs to be all about him, where he is the guy that did it, and you came along and helped me. I don't know if
Kyrie,
I don't know
Kyrie,
if he's convinced
is ass wipe too? Is he the ass wipe too? Like,
yeah, he is. He's the
ass. Okay, there
yes. he's absolutely an asshole. I can already tell you that Kyrie, the earth is flat and all that other foolishness, and Kyrie is a different kind of cat. So, to me, I look at that and say, okay, I can see him going to the Knicks, and he's looking around like Rob has said it. The East is still so wide open. So I know everything about the Boston Celtics. I've played here. I know these guys, strengths and their weaknesses, but they can do this without me. I can go somewhere else. Jimmy Butler's not happy with his young teammates in Minnesota. Me and Jimmy have talked about going to the Knicks. We can go and get our own team together and talk to Porzingis, say, hey, we're coming to, you know, dude, I think Porzingis would be like, hell yeah. You're going to give me these two guys? Let's go get it. So now you're talking about they quietly, super quietly formed a ridiculous team with Porzingis, Kyrie Irving, and Jimmy Butler. If you are a Knicks fan and you got those two guys talking about it and for maybe some back channels like, don't worry about it, KP, we coming. Just hold tight. I know it's rough right now, but we on our way. Hold tight. In 2019, those two guys formed joint forces in New York. I could see that happening. And yeah, you have to really take the Knicks a heck of a lot more serious than you do now. I mean, we talk about waiting for Washington to take the next step, and we feel like Toronto is just a running with Kawhi, and they're going to take a step back. It leaves a vacuum of just Boston and Philadelphia, and they could go to the Knicks, the two of them, and you could really have three. It could make the East fun, where you have those three guys, like, you know, four through eight or nine is nothing. But that top three, who's going to have to play each other in the second round and who's going to be sitting there waiting in the finals for the winner of that one, in the Eastern Conference Finals, that is, could be really exciting. So I honestly hope that happens. I hope those two guys go with KP to New York and play for the Knicks. That would be really interesting in the East.
Well, are you talking about right, the Knicks, Sixers, and the Celtics? You talking about how those matchups would look up in the old days in the Eastern Conference? Wow, right there in the Northeast Corridor. That would be kind of exciting to watch. I think the Wizards, you know, you mentioned the
hold
Wizards,
on.
John
Rob,
Wall,
hey,
Bradley
Rob, Beal. Hey, Rob.
Hold on, Rob.
I just want to, yeah, I can hear you fine. I just want to let you know that. Go ahead and say, it's literally, we're at OT portion, man, so save that. I know you got a lot of things to say, man, so JQ did his thing. So go ahead and set the OT portion, and then we'll talk about that. Go ahead.
Well, unfortunately, we can't give you this OT portion of our show live, so definitely click on the same link on tomorrow. We'll get you the rest of this information. We got to wrap up our NBA coverage. We're going right into NFL and then the Ohio State situation and the OT portion of the show. So you definitely don't want to miss our coverage of that. Mm-hmm. Our next live program will be this coming Sunday night, which is August 5th. It will be this coming Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. You don't want to miss it. So once again, our next not live program will be this coming Sunday night. But once again, we got a lot more information to cover on this particular show in our OT portion. So click on the same link on tomorrow to get the rest of the show. Thank you. Good night. Thanks for tuning in.
Come on, Urban, man. You can't do that. You can't do that in 2018, bro. You got to tell that dude he can't coach no more when he's smacking his wife. What are you doing to the university and to the fans? That's what he did. You can't deal with that, man. You got to. I don't care how much he's your homeboy or whatever dirty pitches. You gotta work that out. But he's got to go. This is a sad day. Appreciate everybody for listening. I'm sorry I took too much time, but I'm interested to hear Rob's comments on Kyrie going to the Knicks. So y'all tune in, download that podcast, check out what he's got to say. Good night.
Yes, sir. All right, Rob, floor is yours, man. 30 seconds on the, and we'll be in the OT, but go ahead, bro.
Yeah, but that would be really intriguing if you have those three teams all competing in the Eastern Conference on a yearly basis with that kind of talent on all three of those teams. You know, Kyrie Irving, the Saints, really excited about this upcoming season with the Boston Celtics. But I think to some degree the Celtics are looking at Kyrie Irving as possibly being expendable now. They really like the way Terry Rozier played in the playoffs. He was a distributor. He was a phenomenal defender. And he was even able to score the basketball in a pinch as well. And, you know, offensively, obviously, he's not Kyrie Irving. But what he did for them on a defensive end was phenomenal in the playoffs. And with those young studs that they have on that ball club, Jaylen Brown, Tatum, I mean, you still have Al Horford, and you're still getting the
Gordon Hayward.
Guy they got from Utah who had a serious injury. His name is
Gordon Hayward.
Yeah, Gordon Hayward. I mean, they still have
Can
him coming
that
back
like
this year as well. So, I mean, you're talking about a loaded basketball team. But the Celtics are possibly looking at Kyrie Irving as being expendable. So it's going to be real intriguing to see how that shape up this season. I think it's going to come down to what kind of season they end up with this season to see if he's going to remain with the Boston Celtics. I don't know if the Knicks, I know the Knicks and the Nets both would love to have him. I don't know if they're prepared to trade for him. They really would like to sign him in free agency next summer. That's really what the Knicks would like to get him. They really would like to get him in free agency in the summer. But, you know, if it gets to the point where the Celtics are looking to move him and, you know, maybe they take the risk of trading for him. But, you know, it would be a lot easier for them to acquire him in free agency. That way you know you're getting a lockdown contract as opposed to a trade. You're taking a gamble on whether or not he's going to re-sign with you in the offseason. So the Knicks would prefer to wait the next summer to sign Kyrie Irving. So that's going to be really intriguing, though, especially if they can acquire him and how tough that Northeast corridor is going to be in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, gotcha. So I wonder if you're the Knicks, can you say we give you Kevin Knox and a couple first-rounders? Would that be enough, knowing that Kyrie may walk from Boston and it's like, okay, let's get something for him? So you get tempt that guy while he's balled out in the summer, and you give a couple first-round picks with him, because outside of including Porzingis in that deal, I don't know if the Knicks have enough capital to trade for Kyrie. I hear what you're saying, but I mean, I would give him Kevin Knox and a couple first rounds and see what they say.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Kevin Knox's upside looks to be really good. I think the Knicks will be better off holding, just like you say, with Brandon Ingram and, you know, keeping those guys and Kyle Kuzma and not trading for Kawhi Leonard. I think if you're the Knicks, you keep Kevin Knox and you take your chances of hopefully getting Kyrie Irving in the offseason. And then you could put yourself in. Kevin Knox has a chance to be a star in this league. I don't know about superstar, but he's got a chance to be a star in this league. If your eyes are not lying to you, what you saw and the way he played in the summer league. And watch out for Mitchell Robinson, too, this kid. I think he's going to be a solid role player in the NBA. As far as block shots, rebound, running the floor, a really good athlete, too. The Knicks got a chance to be a real sleeper team with the way they their draft process this year. Those guys both can come in and contribute for this team this season.
Yeah, and don't forget that Jimmy Butler wants to come too.
They have an opportunity next summer to turn their franchise around.
Making those Knicks fans, they're crazy. All right, hey, really quickly. So just to say, just put a bow on this one again, as we said the whole night. I really think that about Kyrie. I think what's happening with him and the Celtics, I think he's got his feelings hurt, man, because he realized that, you know, the Celtics pretty much won without him, and they didn't completely, like, you know, fall off the rails. He's like, man, you know, so that's really what I think. I think that he's not feeling enough to the love, like he's the man, like you said earlier, JQ, and so that's kind of why he's not being noncommittal too. So, again, Robbie, you mentioned it. They're playing more team basketball. They actually seem like they played better without him, which is kind of crazy. You would think that. But they just kind of like gelled, and, you know, some players grew and had more confidence. And now, like you said, Rob, that they're looking like, hey, you know, he's more expendable now as opposed to before. So, anyway, that's what I'm going
to
say.
But if you recall, Kyrie Irving get to the rack and score around the basket on just about anybody. So, offensively, he's still a big-time player, and he hits big-time shots, too.
Not a knock.
So, so he's still a big-time player. Like I said, I mean, the Celtics made it seem like they can, you know, he can be expendable, but he's still 26 years old, and he can definitely go to another franchise if healthy and still be a big-time stud offensively.
In New York, too? Yeah. That's cool. Yep. All
All right. He's also a real ball dominant, and just keeping him around stunts the growth that you've seen out of Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, because Kyrie's going to have the ball so much. So just
good
last
call.
Piece of it.
Good. That's a great call.
And Rozier,
yep.
Like you said, he was great at distributing the basketball, and he was great on the defense.
He made that team
man.
Better.
And you saw him have even some 20-point nights, too. So he was
mm-hmm.
He did a lot for that team on an all-around level as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So sometimes the injuries are the best thing. So, yeah. So that's I think he's still – I'm taking my ball. I'm going to New York. So forget y'all. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, let's talk about the NFL here. Our training camps have been open, having some good vibes about a lot of things. And the first question I think we're going to talk about really quickly is Ezekiel Elliott. Will he get back to being the NFL's top rusher? I am going to emphatically say no, hell no, if you want to put that on there. The reason why, I just don't trust Dez Bryant. I think they're going to stack the box. They're not going to let
you don't trust Dez Bryant. He don't play for them no more.
I'm sorry, not Dez. Dak Prescott. I'm so sorry. I was looking at something else. I'm sorry. I don't trust Dak Prescott at all, and they're going to try to test them. They don't have the wide receivers. Even with Dez, they don't have Jason Witten. There's no way that Ezekiel Elliott, and that's not a knock against your Ohio State boy, JQ, but I just don't think it's in the cards, man. So they don't really have any of the weapons, honestly, to kind of put any fear. So unless you're going to have some type of creative way to get things done, like the Wildcat, the Wild Cowboy, I don't think it's going to happen. So that's just me. What say you, JQ?
Yeah, and again, the other piece of it is with that offensive line going back to play the way they played 2 years ago, because to me they really regressed last year. And even when they got Zeke back after that suspension, I just don't feel like he was finding the holes in the lanes. And part of that could be because they're stacking in and wide receivers aren't there. But when you watch the offensive line play for Dallas, I don't feel like they played up to the level they did a couple of years ago. And the other piece of it is, there's some very talented runners out there in the NFL that you're talking about where you say he's going to lead the league in rushing. You still have a Le'Veon Bell if he comes to camp from Pittsburgh. You still have a Ty Gurley out there. What does Saquon do? What does Leonard Fournette do in Jacksonville if he can also stay healthy?
Yeah.
David Johnson comes back first. I mean, you got some really good running backs across the NFL. So to say that he's going to be the top rusher, to me, is I will also say no. You know I love Zeke. But he just has a lot of things going against that goal in his own team's play, but also just the elevated play of running backs around the league.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. And I don't know if it was last week, last show, or the week before that, we did our NFC East predictions. And offensively is the reason why I just can't see the Cowboys coming close to winning that NFC East. And it's not because of Zeke Elliott. Can he still have a 1,200, 1,300-yard rush season? Absolutely, I could definitely see that. But leading the league in rushing, I do not see that for the same reasons both of you all have already mentioned. And I would be more inclined to say a Todd Gurley or Le'Veon Bell will be the two guys that could lead the league in rushing. And when you look at the diversity of both of those offenses that they're in, Todd Gurley, you know, you saw the development of Jared Goff. You added Brandon Cooks. I mean, you got weapons and throwing the football. They can spread out the offense a little bit more. And the same thing with Pittsburgh. You still got Antonio Brown out there. You still got weapons on the perimeter that can help the running game as well and help them spread the offense. Dallas has no one, unless somebody just comes out of nowhere to be a receiver that could help spread that offense out a little bit and open up the game for Ezekiel Elliott. But, I mean, there's no reason for teams not to have 8-9 men in the box against the Cowboys until Prescott or receiver is able to open up that offense for them. But can he still be a 1,200-a-year rusher this season? Absolutely. But I just cannot see him leading the league in rusher this year.
Mm-hmm.
Good call. Appreciate that. We're all on the same page with that. All right. So let's talk about a very interesting topic. And I don't know if this is kind of guys taking this with a grain of salt, but you've got a lot of good feedback regarding Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. So, again, I say take that with a grain of salt because have the Browns quarterbacks been that bad or what? But word on the street is that Baker has been phenomenal. He's been flooring. The word has been – they've been floored as far as his progression.
Yeah,
he had an interception in training camp. Yeah, he's getting the ball. He's getting the ball at quick, accurate. He's comfortable with the playbook, helping his teammates, learning the offensive schemes, and their best saying he's light years ahead of where they should be. So, again, as much as I, who would have thought that you actually wanted to see the Browns play in preseason? But you know, Tyron's going to start, but then you know, definitely looks like Baker Mayfield's going to definitely put some pressure. But you know, what do you think about this, really, Rob? As far as that goes, as far as what they're saying about Baker Mayfield.
Well, obviously he's their number one pick overall, so obviously the organization had to be floored before he even came to camp for him to even make that number one pick. Now, initially, you know, in the off-season workouts, they were saying, oh, not quite ready yet. You know, Tyrod is going to be our guy. But now you're starting to see them, you know, saying he's picking up things, you know, he's processing information very quickly now, getting rid of the football. They're really excited about him. You know, I'll be really intrigued to see some of these preseason games. I know it is preseason, but I'll be very intrigued to watch the Cleveland Browns and seeing how Baker Mayfield is progressing here going forward. I still expect Tyrod Taylor to start the regular season. I could be wrong, but I still expect him to at least start the first couple of to four games before you see they turn it over to Baker Mayfield. I think by the second quarter of the season, Baker Mayfield for sure will be the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. It's going to be a lot of pressure. Hugh Jackson coming off another horrible year. What were they, 0-16 last year?
Yep.
So the pressure is going to be on for them to give the football to Baker Mayfield sooner rather than later and to see what they have going forward. And for Hugh Jackson's case, it may be you know, for him to save his job. Because when you look at the Cleveland Browns' schedule, even with Tyrod Taylor or Baker Mayfield, it's going to be tough to see them being better than 1-3 after those first four games of the season. So they would have to do something to get the fan base involved and to try to see if there's any kind of a bright future with Baker Mayfield and Hugh Jackson together. They will have to turn over the lead to him, in my opinion, at least after the first quarter of the season.
Yeah, so there's a lot there for that. If you go back and remember, the top two quarterbacks in my mind coming into, you know, the draft this year was one, I was a fan of Lamar Jackson. And to me, Baker Mayfield was my number two. And of all of those guys, Baker Mayfield was the most accurate. And for me, you know, I hate what he did with the playing under the flag. But that dude just won games, and he cared about winning. People with the Johnny Manziel was like, he's not, you know, in the offseason, you know, for the most part, he had the one incident, but not just consistently being – you know, a troublemaker off the field. So to me, I didn't understand that piece of it. He got moxie. You know, I love that. And he just won games. So I'm not surprised that he went in there and did that. He's just a competitor. The piece of it is with Hugh Jackson, you're right. But there's also that is that, will he say, okay, you know, even ownership knows with Baker Mayfield, we wouldn't do better than 1-3. So they're going to give me somewhat of a pass on that because they know we're still rebuilding. If I'm Hugh Jackson, Tyrod Taylor doesn't turn the ball over. And he might not have the upside as Baker, but he's not going to make dumb mistakes more often than not to be Cleveland like other Cleveland quarterbacks have done. So I feel like he was going to give Tyrod a little bit longer leash because he's going to say, you know what, like you said, my job is on the line. I got to get Tyrod, unless Tyrod just looks absolutely horrible. I mean, where it's just plain for everybody to see that, you know, it's time to turn it over. I think he's going to get Tyrod a little bit of a leash because he's going to want that veteran quarterback to try to move that team along with those wide receivers they got. And, they also have, the running back from Georgia they drafted, Chubb. You know, they still have that going. I still feel like he's just going to give him a little bit of a longer leash. But I do feel like at some point this season, Baker is going to take over. I just don't know if I say, you know, by game five or six. I think it may be when if Tyrod just isn't the guy and it's like, you know what, okay, we are 2-6. And it's like, okay, there's nothing left to play for. We've got these AFC teams ahead of us. Let's see what Baker's got. I think it's the second half of the season. That's the second quarter of the season we takes over. So I'm just splitting hairs in terms of when I think it's going to happen. But I do think it's going to happen, and I'm not surprised that Baker, you know, showed out of camp. I'm really not.
Yeah, he had an incredible quick release, and you can definitely see that he processes information very quickly. You can see that on his college game tape and even just from some of the practice footage that you've seen. You know, he definitely processes information very quickly, which is very important for a young quarterback, very important for the quarterback position, period. And so you can see the twos and intangibles are definitely there for him.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's a good call. Wrapping it up, too, just to kind of talk about, too. And I think it's a good move to start with Tyrod because, again, even though he's been playing well, you know, that's a lot of pressure on the young guy. I mean, no matter what happens, he's still a rookie. He's still going to, you know, go through his little growing pains, even though he's making – he looks like the makeup is there. Looks a lot better. I mean, Johnny Manziel had a lot of the moxie, too, and the competitiveness, but he just didn't have the mental capacity as we're seeing now. But
Johnny Manziel,
you know,
getting ready to start in the Canadian Football League, or has it happened already?
Yeah, oh, my gosh. No,
I think it happens
again. Yeah, something crazy.
Yeah.
But so, again – this, you know, the Browns, I give them, it's crazy to say we're giving them credit because, you know, normally it's kind of throw them in the fire and let them get destroyed. I'm like, oh, well, you know, another one. But they made the right pick. He's progressing well. And they're not going to, like, put him out to the Wolves just yet. You know, it's going to be a gradual process. Like you said, JQ, I 100% agree. You know, a couple games in, you know, see how it plays out. You talk about Tyrod not making mistakes, Rob. Everything kind of plays out, too, man. So, we'll keep an eye on that. I'm very interested to see them play as well, so it's going to be fun. All right, gentlemen, let's talk about the NFC
and
South.
We're talking about the Cleveland Browns.
I know, right?
That's crazy. That's crazy.
That's crazy. A win in itself.
There it is. They're getting some. They're getting some pub. I'm going to go on the limb and say that we're going to have different teams for our 1 and 2. JQ, straight up, we already know that Rob's going to be Saints 1, Falcons 2, or whatever. You know, I'm going to go Falcons 1, Saints 2. Initially, that third team, I'm going to go with Carolina Panthers only because, again, just out of what's happening with Cam and the new offense, you got to wait and see what happens with that. They still don't have their receivers just quite yet. And then the Bucks, I'm not a fan of what's happening. I know they lost I know he was hurt, their draft pick Vea, and Jameis has got a lot of things happening with him too. So I'm just going to – I'm not going to give a long-winded answer. I'm sure, like, you guys can kind of fill that in for me. But that's kind of what I've got as far as my prediction for that, too. So, Rob, what say you? And then we'll let the objective JQ finish us up.
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm going with the Houdan Nation number one here. I think the Saints and the Falcons, I think it's going to be extremely – I do think it's going to be an extremely tight race between both of those teams. Because I think both of these teams have the potential to be really good offensively. And believe it or not, I think both of these teams have the opportunity to be really good defensively, too. And from the Saints' perspective, you saw the improvement on defense with the improvements that they made in the secondary, really in every level of the defense this year. Now they add another pass rusher as well outside of Cameron Jordan, which they desperately needed. So I think when you look at those elements, I think you're going to see a fierce race between the Saints and the Falcons. I really do believe I think the Saints could have a 13-3 kind of year, and the Falcons could be right behind them, like 12-4. So I really do believe that that's the kind of year we're going to have from both of those teams at the top of the NFC West this
year. I concur.
I mean, when you look at the NFC picture here, I think the Rams had the potential to have like a 14-2 kind of year. So they're close when you talk about the top echelon NFC teams there, and obviously you got to throw the Eagles in the mix too. But so that's where I kind of see the division going there. I see the Saints as being slightly better, 13-3, and the Falcons right behind them. I think Carolina is going to be a middle of the pack kind of team this year. I think they're somewhere around 8-8. This year. So just falling. Now, Tampa was a team I thought was going to rise a little bit this year. But I think with Jameis missing these first three games, I think it's going to set Tampa back this year. I think it's going to be hard for them to recover in this division without him being in those first three games. So I'm going to say they're going to be the team that's going to finish last and, you know, behind, you know, Carolina. So I'm going to go Saints, Falcons, Panthers, and then the Bucks, bringing up the rear of the division.
And the thing about it is, you know, and Rob, I'm surprised he didn't throw me under the bus in there, and rightfully so, because I've been talking about the Bucks for the past couple of years. It's that team I thought that was going to make a move in the NFC. But I totally agree. Losing Winston is just something they couldn't have happen when you've got that top-heavy piece with the Falcons and the Saints. They had to have him. They had to have that ability to steal one of those games in that home-and-home between those two teams with Tampa Bay. So I'm going to start at the bottom and say, yeah, I think everybody's in agreement that it's Tampa number four. I'm also in agreement with you guys on Carolina at three. I just don't think they have enough outside quite yet to get it done. They're kind of smallish at wide receiver right now outside of kid from Michigan that they got. But he's not really
I think he's starting
to
age on defense, too, when you look at Carolina. Those linebackers are getting up there in age, secondary and things of that nature. They're still going to be solid up front, but that back seven of the defense, you're going to start to see the linebacker group is starting to age a little bit, and their secondary is not where it needs to be.
Yeah, I agree. I think they have some speed if they can get Curtis Samuel back and, of course, McCaffrey. But, again, Funches has got good hands but for the most part. But, you know, he's not going to run away from anybody. So I'm going to put Carolina, I agree. I think that defense is starting to get old. And it happens. And Luke Kuechly, especially with the injuries, with the concussions, you don't really know. I kind of equate him to kind of like Sean Lee where they're fabulous when they're out there. But those injuries and those concussions are starting to mount for him. So I'll put Carolina three.
You don't have Thomas Davis for four games and the offensive line.
Thomas Davis.
Be a little down this year, too.
The top piece, you know, I go to plenty of Falcons games. I root for the Falcons. They're my NFC team. I think these teams are so comparable when you talk about the improvements they both have made on defense. The fact that they both have a multifaceted run game. You've got Julio for Atlanta. You've got Michael Thomas, who is really emerging for New Orleans. I mean, they're so close that I feel like it's a coin flip. But if I got to stay true to myself as much as it hurts me, you guys always know what I'm going to say. If I've got to take a chance between two close teams, I'm going to what position? The quarterback position. I'm going to quarterback position. And as much as Matt Ryan has improved, was the MVP, I just can't take Matt Ryan over Drew Brees. I just can't do it with the chips on it. When the chips and everything on the line, it's slight. Like, it's super slight. Like Rob said, it's going to be one game. One of those games they play each other late in the year, that's going to decide it. And I just feel like Matt Ryan makes one more bad decision and one more bad throw that costs him the game where Drew Brees wouldn't. So by a slight edge, super slight edge, to put New Orleans one and put Atlanta two. But I think that's fluid. That 1-2 spot in the NFC South. It's going to be really fun to watch, but I just got to go with Drew Brees. If there's a tiebreaker to be made with the quarterback, you know, I'll put Drew Brees, Tom Brady, and Aaron Rodgers in that holy triumvirate in the quarterbacks for me in the NFL. So if he's in the conversation, I got to go with Drew.
Yeah.
I got you.
You know, last year we saw three teams from the division make the playoffs, and, you know, all three of those teams were really, really close to one another. And but I think I think the Saints and the Falcons are going to distance themselves from the rest of the division this year, and Carolina falls down. That's just kind of where I envision it. You know, obviously that's why they play the games, see if it plays out that way. But when you just look at the personnel that the Saints and the Falcons have on both sides of the field now, like I said, you know, for so long the Saints didn't have the personnel on defense. And now you got guys like Cameron Jordan, you have Marshawn Lattimore. And even though Marcus Williams missed that tackle in that playoff game, Marcus Williams had a chance to be a Pro Bowler for the Saints. I mean, he had a phenomenal rookie season last year prior to that missed tackle. The personnel is there, you know, and then, of course, so both teams, you know, look like they have it on both sides of the field.
Yep. And I'll give you that too, JQ. If you are going quarterback, even objectively as I can be, you know, definitely a Drew Brees fan, I definitely give him a nod over Matt Ryan. That's even from my guy too. So that's how you would go that direction, 100% in agreement with that. So and that's being objective as much as it pains me to say that too. So all good.
Yeah, and the same thing, Ohio State South.
There it is.
Yeah, well, right. I didn't factor that into the equation as we segue into that.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen.
Hey, we even got JT Barrett taking snaps in training camp.
That's crazy. I love it.
All right. Let's wrap this up here. And to our dismay, and we want to end on a little happier note. But you know, again, we do have to talk about what's happening currently in the news and the situation with Ohio State with Urban Meyer. We were making some comments, and if he's going to survive after this, and it's not looking so great, honestly, JQ, man. So just to talk a little bit about the situation, hearing what's happening as far as the domestic situation and Urban kind of going in a different direction and kind of looking like he's contradicting himself. This is going to definitely change the year for Ohio State, bro. And they're loaded, but it could be an interesting year. What say you about this, Shaky? We'll let you have the floor, man.
Yeah. Yeah, it's sad, but, you know, the thing about it is if I step away from it, you know, I joked about it when I was waiting on the rain delay that they put him on paid leave because they were waiting on somebody else to do something stupid to have some racist tweets from 2011 or something come up and kind of blow it over. But, I mean, you know, because it's always, you know, a day or two and the next dumb thing is going to happen that somebody did. But in this day and age in this society where we are now, and it's not a knock, it's something where probably somewhere we should have been, and not probably should have been, you know, years ago to where you just don't let these things kind of ride. I don't care how much of a homeboy he is for you and what you think he's doing for your program.
100%.
You can't cover that up, and then you can't come out and lie. And the lady's like, oh, really? I got the receipts. She'll go to text messages to Shelly Meyer, and it's like, ooh, there's no way Shelly Meyer knew about it, and you, Urban Meyer, and you the head honcho at Ohio State, and you didn't know. You just can't say that.
It doesn't look
that's
right.
That's just not plausible. Yeah, it's not a plausible offense. We're all married, and there's no way if our wives knew about somebody at our jobs doing something super foul to their wives, that our wives wouldn't say something to us like, I hope you ain't hanging out with that guy. Our wives, he's still employed. I mean, they would come to us forthwith, you know, expeditiously with that information, like, here you go, look at this, what you going to do? And I feel like Shelly did that. I just don't feel like that his explanation is plausible. So, you know, as much as I would love him to stay at Ohio State, it also affects recruiting. They're going to negative recruit him. Do you want your son to go spend with this guy who protects, you know, domestic violence abuser? Like, you can't have that for Ohio State. You can't have it. But teams would definitely use that against you. So I understand Ohio State trying to step out in front of it like, yeah, no, you know, we're going to try to ease this thing into, like, a transition process. But I think the writing's on the wall. The Urban Meyer era is officially over. For me, I'd be shocked if it wasn't at Ohio State. But it has the ripple effect of all those guys. He's still going to get that. They're still Ohio State. They're still going to get a decent coach.
He'll still get a top-notch coach, no doubt about it.
Yeah, and some recruits. But he was recruiting at such a level where he was pulling people out of Georgia, away from UGA, out of Florida, from Florida State. You know what I mean? Out of the Southeast, from Alabama, from the LSUs. That guy, they get to replace him, can he do that? I think that's what is able to separate him as a coach, to put together an upper echelon team where we're always going to have really good guys, but we're going to go get the best of best from all these other states, from the backyards of other programs that would love to have him, that thought they were a shoo-in to have him because, you know, we're Power University in this city. He's in our backyard. Oh, he went to Ohio State. What? Like, can that next guy do that? And that's a lot of big shoes to fill, and I just feel like naturally that's going to come back. So, you know, I enjoyed it while it lasted. I understand we're going to go through some hardships here and well-deserved because of what happened. But it's definitely a sad day in Columbus and definitely a dark cloud hovering over the program. There's no way to mince words or sugarcoat it. It's just bad.
Jim Harbaugh sends his condolences too, by the way, as far as that.
Yeah, he's somewhere dancing.
Andre's silly.
Go ahead, Rob.
Oh, man.
Out there doing the Millie Rock.
Now that's funny. Ahead,
yeah.
Rob.
You know, the thing about it is, you know, he obviously, I think we all know that Urban Meyer knew about this situation. And, but let's just say, be devil advocates and say he didn't know about it. You need to know about it. when you're running your program, you need to know about these situations and things of that nature as well. And so you have to put the onus on him on this situation. Obviously, you know, outside of Nick Saban, he's probably the best college football coach that we've seen here in the last 10 years. You know, when you look at what he's done at Florida and what he's been able to do at Ohio State. Now, Ohio State is still going to be Ohio State. Maybe not this year. Even with the personnel, sometimes you still need to have the right coach in place. So you got to think that it might fall off slightly this year just because of the not having their head coach there if he's not going to be there this year. But in long term, Ohio State's still going to be able to get a top-notch coach. They're still going to be able to recruit. I mean, they're one of the few schools from the north that can go down south and get players, 4- and 5-star players from the south. Now, the Iowas of the world and the Minnesotas of the world, they're able to go down south and get 2- and 3-star players. But Ohio State is able to go down to these other places and get 4- and 5-star players from anywhere around the country. I mean, they tap into New Jersey's talent pool. They tap into their own state. They tap into the states in the south, as JQ mentioned. So they'll be able to continue to do that with the right football coach. And there's still a lot of good football coaches out there. Hey, will Tom Herman leave Texas to go back? You know, I don't know. But, you know, there's still some big-time football coaches out there that can still win and be successful. Can it be as successful as Herman Meyer? We have to wait and see. But, you know, they'll still be Ohio State in the long term. Like I said, maybe not this year because, you know, there's going to be so much turmoil around the program and, you know, who's going to lead the ship this year and things of that nature. So that'll be hard for them to overcome this year, even with the personnel that they do have. But long term, like I said, you know, they went from Jim Tressel to Urban Meyer. Jim Tressel won at least one championship that I can recall. So they'll still be a competitive program for many years to come.
Yeah, it's going to set them back in the short term. I worry about the recruits right now. So you're right. Like, long term, when they get that guy in there, he can put his stamp back on it. And then he kind of gets that recruiting machine. The way he does it, he can get it going. But if I'm Alabama, if I'm LSU, if I'm Florida State, you know, if I'm Clemson, those guys in that 2019 class, those early 2020 pledges, with him being gone, I'm calling them. If I didn't call them today, I'm calling them tomorrow. Like, you sure? You still want to go there? Like, so it's going to affect that short term, that piece of it, until they get a guy in there. Ryan Day, I think, is a good offensive mind. He was the co-offensive coordinator. He's not an interim head coach. But he didn't have that name cachet to say, you know what, I'm going to turn down the overtures from Nick Saban, from Dabo Swinney, you know, from those guys that are trying to pull me from this recruiting class because right now, you know, Ryan Day's a dude. Like, you know, that's not going to happen. You know, those guys are going to be able to have that will. Like, we were in your top three, and we understand Urban's a good, you know, a good coach. Ohio State's a good program. But now, do you trust what they're going to do? Or how valuable, how solid is your commitment right now to Ohio State for 2019 and 2020 for those guys that have committed? That's what I worry about, honestly, the most. I think they can do a decent job this year, but that recruiting of who they can get and how that impacts, you know, those guys and other programs they're building to flip them concerns me greatly heading for the 2019 season than it does 2018.
Yeah, and I tell you what, Kirby Smart is making it really hard for players to come into Georgia now.
Kirby Smart. Yep.
Is getting getting players. You know, a lot of schools were able to come into Georgia and get talent, but man, he's making it mighty hard now, and he's getting his pickings from some other states too. I mean, he just got a commitment from the number two running back in the country, just out of New Orleans area. Now, you know, New Orleans. If you either going to Alabama or LSU if you're from that area. Now we got a commitment to go to Georgia, so you got to watch Kirby Smart to the recruiting cycle as well, and the way they're recruiting at Georgia now too. He's doing a phenomenal job.
Yeah, thank you. Forgot Kirby. Yeah, you can't forget about Kirby. He's doing a really good job, but he's learning at the foot of, you know, Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't necessarily when you got the Georgia machine behind you, it doesn't surprise me that he's doing that. But that's a good call. I didn't mean to leave out Kirby Smart, but yeah, that's another one. Just, you know, more fuel to the fire of what Ohio State is going to face in terms of those guys trying to poach and be more of a in those guys' ear for 2019. Like, yeah, you need to come here because Ohio State's in flux. So definitely a sad day for the program, but it's not a death meal.
Cry for me, Argentina. Nope. Let's wrap this up, Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, we thank everybody for tuning in again. Another great show, Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Like I said, we're coming to you on a short week's rest, so we're going to be right back at you on Sunday night. Sunday night, I believe we have our first preseason game this Sunday night, if I'm not mistaken. I believe it's the Bears against somebody, but whoever.
Hall of Fame.
You know, Bears against who?
Oh, I'll check it too. Yeah, Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay. It's the Hall of Fame game, I believe, is this Sunday night. So we'll get our first quick snap action of some preseason
football.
NFL football on this coming Sunday night. So once again, we'll be back at you on this coming Sunday night. Obviously, we get into the harder so we got more NFL predictions. We'll start going through the AFC divisions. We're going to start going over some predictions for some college football here as well here pretty soon. So a lot more is on the horizon. Still, we're getting to the tail end of the free agency and the NBA, so that will start quieting down a little bit. So we'll be mainly focusing on the National Football League, college football, and, of course, baseball as we get close to the stretch run here, getting close to the playoff time in October. All right, people, good night. We'll see you on Sunday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific. definitely tune in. We're looking forward to having you. Good night, people.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. A lot of good stuff still to get to. I'll be okay. You know, we're going to bounce back, and we're going to be all right. So I'm going to be straight. We appreciate everybody for listening to the show and downloading it. The podcast was to the OT portion. We holler at you on Sunday. I'll be in better spirits, for sure. And good night.
And with that
y'all
bounce
have a
back
good...
song, Andre. You got ready to play it?
Bounce back. Bump me against the wall. Oh, yeah. Come on, not the mystical. but yeah, dude,
bounce back. Come on, Andre.
Yeah,
you got queued up?
Oh, hold on. I get a queued up. Yeah. But, you know, it's funny because, again, you know, it's funny. The fact is, you know, this is JQ. He's been having a pretty rough week, man. So, but it's all good, man. You know, so we're gonna keep it going. Can you hear that?
Yeah, I can hear it.
Bring it up. That's how we ended the show for y'all tonight.
Yeah, here's with the big shot.
Bounce back, JQ.
You fall down, people. You got to bounce back.
Yes, sir. With that big shot. I ain't mad at you.
Take those L's and bounce back. It's all good. Hey, man, again, we want to thank you. This has been a very entertaining show. As always, as we like to do, try to keep you guys going here. Thanks for listening to us. Again, gentlemen, have a fantastic week. I'm sure we'll be definitely connecting throughout, as we always do. And as Rob said, JQ said, we'll see you Sunday, the 5th, and let's keep this going. And, yeah, we'll keep you in better spirits, too, man. So it's all good, man. All right? Good night, people.
Yes, sir.
Bounce back.
All right, y'all.
Bounce back.
Good night, people.
Good night. Yep.
All right, y'all. I'll see you later.
Yep.